What's up, Brainiacs? Hope you're enjoying the podcast. Just a programming note that every Monday at 9 Central, you can join me, Andrew Cieslak, and Josh Custodio for Monday Night Program. Come hang out with us as we continue to build the WBCW universe using Fire Pro Wrestling Promoter Mode. Who should we sign? What matches should we book? Join us for the only professional wrestling program on Monday nights. That's Monday Night Program on twitch.tv/wrestlingbrain.
Comics in the combat zone, comics in the combat zone. Usually we make you laugh, but now we're watching guys get stabbed with light tubes.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome back to the Comics in the Combat Zone. This week, talking CZW, The Boss is Back. April 7th, 2001, in Sewell, New Jersey, the Soccer Champs Arena. Ben, I gotta say, when I read the name The Boss is Back, I did not have high hopes for this show.
No, I mean, there's been about 12 bosses at this point, so I don't know who the... I guess, I mean, they obviously mean Zandig, but there's VPs popping up all the time and new...
Yeah, do you think they meant Zabar?
Maybe.
Well, he never left, I guess.
Yeah, but he's like, whenever he comes into the stadium, he's back.
Yes, that's true. He is back. Like, he left the arena, and now he is back.
Yeah, for sure. And what a way to come back, the opening of the show.
Yeah, so the show begins with the reformed Hate Club, including Just In Case. The commentators were like, oh, my God, it's Just In Case.
Yeah.
He had, like, no presence on this show. Very strange.
Definitely one of the wildest CZW openings, for sure.
Right, because they have Zabar is, like... it's not a spit roast.
He's hogtied
to a pole.
Yeah.
And Smack Mac and I believe Just In Case are bringing him out to the ring, gagged and bound. And yeah, it's quite the visual. I thought it was sort of cool though. It wasn't offensive.
Yeah, it was wild. Like you know, prefer this to a John Dahmer opening match. So
for sure. And they like put him in. They struggle to like figure out how they're gonna put him into the ring because he is like legitimately hogtied to a pole. But they finally get him in there, and then they sort of set him up on the second row, like diagonally, sort of like they do with ladders and ladder matches. And then Wife Beater proceeds to like waterboard him with crisps.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool.
Yeah, I think Max Mac's not there, or he did with eating them.
No, Max Mac. Oh yeah, no, he was there.
Oh okay. Yeah, well, yeah. He did well then.
Yeah, he cut a shitty promo at one point, and then also they're like, "All right, Wife Beater, do it." And Wife Beater does that spot where he rips off his soiled underwear, and then
classic,
and then shoves it in Zavara's face, which nothing better than that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. So Justice Payne ends up taking the mic, and he cuts, like, a decent promo. He takes it from Smack Mac, who was, like, bombing on promo. And then Justice Payne even does a hilarious Zandig impression, where he's like, oh, I'm the owner of fucking CZ
fucking
W. Like, yeah. He does that, what we do. So I thought that was great, actually. And then he's like, you know what? Zandig even sent me a voice message this morning. And I'm going to play it for you all right now. And they do what I've seen so many comics try to do this, where they hold the mic, their phone mic up to the microphone.
Oh, yeah. Just
and,
never.
And you just can't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's the audio is bad enough already without another layer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The audio is as worse as it's ever been in Sewell. You cannot understand a promo all night long.
How I long for Froggy's Bar and how I long for a night of retribution at Froggy's Bar and Grill.
Yeah, so they literally do this thing, holding the phone up. You can't understand it at all. The fans start booing and saying, like, what are you talking about? Like, just talking over it. And then Smack Mac's like, well, basically what he said was, and I couldn't even understand what he said. Yeah. And then Mac does his own shitty sort of impression of Zandig. And then the commentators just speak over all of a sudden. They're like, is that who I think it is? The boss is back. And Zandig rushes the ring with Jun Kasai and Trent Acid. They just chase out the Hate Club. Like, you'd think it would lead to a brawl, but the Hate Club just, like, leave the ring and give it to them.
Yeah, while Zabar's just covered in crisps.
Yeah. So they untie Zabar, unfortunately. And Zandig introduces them as the Big Deals before the crowd chants a huge fuck you Zandig chant. And then Zandig shuts them down with a gay joke. He's like, oh, yeah, you know what gay people say? Fuck you, Zandig. Like, no, it wasn't like that, but it was like it was something equally as lame. And he says, tonight, Justice Pan and Wife Beater must beat Nate Hatred and Nick Gage in 5 minutes. If they don't, the match changes from that to Justice Bantam Whitebeater versus himself and Jun Kasai. So, like, it's no longer a title match. It'll be a completely different match.
No, it mutates.
Yes, the match mutates, yes. and then Zabar, I mean, this is the funniest part. They go to leave, and Zabar, with his legs tied up, like, hops to the back.
Yeah, that's a pretty funny image. I'll give him that. It was pretty funny.
And he even just bailed right at the end.
Yeah.
Nothing funnier than seeing a guy fall. Then we get a cut, and I was very excited by this graphic, because out first is former ECW Tag Team Champion, former ECW legend, and future WWE star, Little Guido.
Is that his name in WWE as well when he went there?
No, they call him Nunzio.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Little Guido. I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, did you not like that? The Sicilian shooter?
Little Guido. I don't know. It just makes me think of Jersey Shore, and I was like, he looks nothing like Paulie D.
Is that offensive?
Guido? No, I don't think so. If he's giving it to himself.
Yeah.
If that's like his name. But he's not little either. He's pretty big.
Dude, he's shredded.
Yeah,
He comes out here looking better than anyone on this roster.
Yeah, especially his opponent.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. So I will do a quick side profile here. Trained by wrestling legend Billy Robinson, he debuted in 1991 as James Stone.
Oh, okay.
A far cry from Little Guido.
Little Guido,
that's probably his real name.
And then Little Guido's his real name. James Stone was a stage name.
A year later, he would be in ECW, then known as Eastern Championship Wrestling, until 1994, where he would return to the Indies, just, you know, getting his time in. And then he comes back to ECW in 1996 as Little Guido, one part of the FBI, a.k.a. the Full-Blooded Italians. Probably his best run, featuring many notable matches, most famously with Tajiri and Super Crazy. He was the third part of those triple threat matches.
Oh, okay.
They're all very good. He would remain with ECW until the doors closed, and then go back to the Indies for a cup of tea, like we're seeing here in CZW. He was brought to the WWE as Nunzio, with a similar gimmick as Jamie Noble's, like, cousin. So I got this Italian cousin. His name's Nunzio.
Hey.
Basically playing a gangster. But then he would eventually reform the FBI under the creative direction of Paul Heyman. I don't know if this guy would have had a job in WWE if Paul Heyman wasn't booking SmackDown at the time.
Oh, okay. Were they like best? Well, oh yeah, I probably knew him from ECW, right?
Yeah, Paul Heyman's like, just like, hey, I'm
you
just going to
well.
Do
yeah.
the same faction
we
on
need an
SmackDown.
Italian man.
But he would have a really long run in the cruiserweight division. This might actually be a better run than his ECW one. Definitely more people saw it. He had great matches with guys like Rey Mysterio, again, Tajiri. Before the cruiserweight division was eventually disbanded in 2007, right around the time he left. Although he would have a brief run as a WWE referee from 2010 to 2011, he returned to the Indies, where he remains today.
Is he still going?
I think so, yeah. That's what Wikipedia said. He had a TNA appearance in 2022.
Oh, nice. Oh, fair play.
Go figure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but he looks healthy.
He looks so shredded here. I was, like, caught off guard by it.
Yeah.
Because I've always known him as Little Guido. Like, when you see him in ECW and WWE, he's, like, the smallest guy in every match he's in. But for some reason, in the CZW arena,
he's a big fish in a little pond.
This guy looks like such a pro wrestler.
Yeah, he's a jacked fish.
Yes, a jacked fish.
In a small pond.
In a pond full of not jacked guys. So he gets on the mic right away, and he's just threatening the crowd right away. He's like, CZW has been begging me to wrestle here for months. Which the commentator's like, no, they haven't. They didn't.
Yeah, they
like
haven't.
The commentator always makes the argument for the company, which I think is sort of funny.
Yeah.
And he's like, this company is exactly what I expected. Untalented wrestlers and ugly fans.
Fair.
I thought that was
he's
such
not
a
wrong.
Funny line. And so next out, his opponent is former CZW world champion Nick Burke. And I was sort of excited about this match. I'm like, at least they gave him, like, a worker. Like, is that who you would have given Little Guido in his first match in? It's just a guy to have a good match with?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know who. Well, like, maybe. I don't know if Nick Burke's, like, if he's a good wrestler. I mean, I've not seen any of his matches. But I don't know. Maybe someone a little bit better. Like, Burke's all right.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty insane what the commentator's juicing up Nick Burke when they're just like, he's probably one of the most technically good wrestlers in the world.
You know, in the industry today.
Yeah, okay, like, bro. Like,
no,
yeah, yeah, he's okay. But, like, when he comes out and he looks a bit schlubby, especially compared to Lil Guido.
Dude, if it was, like, Nick Mondo versus Little Guido...
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
I would have been like, come on.
Or maybe Trent Acid. Or maybe just, you know, just... I just want to see everyone fight Zandig, to be fair, maybe.
Little Guido versus Zandig.
Yeah.
That would rule. But instead we got Nick Burke. And the match begins by Guido, like, he teases leaving, like, sort of like Trent Acid always does. And then when Burke turns his back, he runs in and just slaps him in the face. And then he runs out of the ring and he gets in this fan's face. And this would be like a theme of this match. I don't know. I couldn't tell if this was like a plant, like part of the match, or if this one guy just kept pissing off Little Guido. Because he kept going to the same fan and getting in his face. And then the security guard would show up and be like...
Yeah, I don't know if it was part of it, personally.
I don't know.
I think that was just a dickhead.
Just a guy, you think, with Little Guido or the fan?
No, the fan, for sure. Yeah.
Because I think he was just yelling, like, obscenities at him.
He's probably being racist. He's being fredophobic.
Yeah. Well, can he be racist towards the Italians, really?
No. That'd be, yeah, person of...
Sausage? No.
No.
Lasagna.
POC, person of, what's the C?
Oh, no. Pasta. Fresh off the boat.
Carbonara. There you go. People of Carbonara. There you go.
Yeah, all right, let's cut this. they begin chain wrestling, exchanging arm bars. It turns into a fast-paced back and forth. Guido throws Burke outside, snapmares him back into the ring, and then he's got him in a headlock, and he just lets go of the headlock to slide out of the ring and get in this fan's face again. It was just so weird. So Burke just attacks him from behind as he's getting in the fan's face. And then he gets, this is why I think the fan's probably a plant, because he tells the fan to hold up the chair and then he throws Guido's face into it. So which is sort of like, you know, if the guy was being a dickhead, you probably wouldn't. That'd be like if the heckler was like ruining the show and you were like, hey, why don't you come in here and we'll do like a dual act, you know?
I think some people have done that. Hosts have done that.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
This is CZW.
Yeah.
They have this awesome reverse off. This felt like Guido sort of flexing, like showing people he can wrestle. Ends with like a sick drop kick to Burke before he goes back to the fan. Like they have this great segment and he drop kicks, this beautiful drop, and then he's back in the fan's face. It's very strange, man.
Yeah, it's very strange.
It feels like they built the match around it in a way.
Yeah, it's odd because there's no hint as to who the fan is or like,
it doesn't,
I don't know, anytime there's momentum, it just stops dead or whatever. It's very strange.
Yeah. So Guido hits the Famouser for two. Burke Irish whips him, but Guido hits a wheelbarrow armbar and then throws Burke outside. Guido planches as Burke just moves out of the way. Like, it's the Samoa Joe spot where Guido just hits into the floor with no one there. And then he's back to his feet in the ring, hits a back body drop in the ring. Guido boots, what do my notes say here? But I will say, I was watching the show on a train to Blackpool.
Nice.
So if my...
perfect environment.
For CZW.
Yeah, for CZW.
Dude, CZW totally would have ran out of Blackpool.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's...
If they could ever make it to England.
Yeah, the New Jersey of England, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, so this is, yeah, so Burke, Guido's in the corner, and Burke runs at him, and Guido puts the boot up, and then he hits a second rope Famouser for two, and then he tries another wheelbarrow bulldog, but Burke just throws him over his head with a German suplex. It looked really good, actually. Guido reverses an Irish whip with a springboard sunset flip for two, and then Burke manages to hit the Burke driver. You think he's going to win, and then wouldn't you know it, at the count of two... The 10-minute time limit has elapsed.
Yeah, Jesus.
How many times have they done
it's
this?
It's the worst. I hate it. They always do it with Burke.
By the way, it ends at 8 minutes and 30.
Really? 30 That's seconds. Funny. And a lot of that was just talking to a fan.
Yeah. I just, it's so, like, so obnoxious that it would be at the 2 count every time.
Yeah, like, it's kind of lame.
It's extremely lame.
Yeah, and they're just like, oh, give him 5 minutes. Give me, the Guido's like, you won't beat me in 1 minute.
Yeah, he says, you wouldn't beat me in 1 minute, and then he bitch slaps him and runs to the back. And this is probably the last time we see Little Guido.
Just running off. Yeah, it's a funny image of him just, like, cowering off.
Yeah, it's one of those where, like, if this was what you were going to do, you might as well just let Nick Burke beat him. To the point that I'm sure Little Guido probably was, like...
I don't think Little Guido would have wanted to lose. I don't think
that's what I mean. That's
anyone from ECW going in would want to lose at CZW.
Like, I've never
cleanly
heard of Nick
or whatever.
Burke.
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, he's a former CZW world champion.
Yeah, he's probably the most technical wrestler we've got.
So the commentator says this next match is the number one contenders for the tag team championship. So I'm very excited right away. Jeff Rocker is out first, and they introduce his partner, and I'm like, oh no, here comes the Rockin' Rebel. No Rockin' Rebel, it's Doomsday Danny Rose. Can you describe what Danny Rose looks like here, Ben?
I don't like. It's hard to describe without just describing, like, just in case Max. He looks like so many other dudes.
He looks like a heavy guy that you'd find at a punk rock concert.
Yeah, who also wrestles at the weekend at CZW. Like he's he's just None of them dress like wrestlers, apart from Jeff Rocker.
Yeah,
and I love the way he walks in. Like, he just cannot move his arms.
And again, these two look like they have nothing in common.
Like, they're like opposite ends of the masculine, or like, you know, Jeff Rocker is chiseled with steroids. And this other dude is just like schlubby and just like, and I'm not using that in derogatory way. He is just a schlub.
Yeah, totally.
And that's fine.
No, I wrote like scuzz punk. Like,
maybe does ska. He's in like a real big Fish tribute band or something like that.
I mean, his name is Doomsday Danny Rose.
Yeah.
And immediately he gets a microphone and he's like, "You just have seen the new most talented wrestler in CZW. And everyone's like, "All right." And then the fans immediately, they answer that with a chant of, "You suck dick."
Yeah.
And he answers that with a chant of his own in the microphone that says, "Yes, I do."
Hell yeah, finally, some LGBT.
Come on.
LGBTD.
Dude, that is an awesome response.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I do suck dick.
And everyone, and the commentator's like, what?
Yeah, yeah. The commentator says, he just admitted it.
I can't believe it.
So out next is Eddie Valentine and John Dahmer, a sort of endearing tag team, I will say.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to see them the second, you know, John Dahmer second.
Yes.
In the thing. And it is a new wrestler as well, so it's surprising. It's a double whammy of him being second with a new wrestler, because normally they put on first, so.
And then finally, Outlast, is the Briscoe brothers, the team I assumed was going to win.
Mm.
And they do say, at one point, the commentator's like, yeah, it's a surprise, Rock and Rebel didn't last. And then eventually the other commentator's like, yeah, forget the Rock and Rebel, he's out of here. And I feel like something happened.
We manifested it in the past.
We're never going to see the Rock and Rebel again.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Me too.
Yeah, he was not growing on me in any way.
Growing on you the same way racism would.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was weird. It was almost like they were making a point of being like, you're not going to see that guy anymore after the weird angle they picked.
He must have fallen out with Zandig.
That's got to be it.
Yeah, yeah.
Zandig's like, oh, I thought you were kidding, brother. You actually don't like them?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the match begins before the Briscoe. Oh, yeah. So the match like starts. So the Briscoes, as they're entering, Rocker and Danny Rose are just fighting with Dahmer and Valentine. They hit dual double Germans to Rocker and Rose. And then the Briscoes are in immediately, and they start doing the identical offense. Have you ever wanted to know if pro wrestling wasn't real for sure? It's just when tag teams start doing the exact same moves at the exact same time.
They're like, so in sync.
It looks cool, but it's also like, this is so ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know how anyone ever thought it was real at any point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they hit double sunset handsprings into head scissors. They send everyone outside, and then the Briscoes just hit Fosbury flops, which, if you don't know what that is a shooting star press over the top rope. I first saw AJ Styles do it, but it's a very impressive move, like just seeing them do it. So the Briscoes, that was only to Dahmer and Eddie Valentine. The Briscoes go to the top rope to dive again, but then Rocker and Rose come in and powerbomb them off the top rope. Danny and Jay sort of single off as Rose starts throwing him around, hits a running high knee. I did feel like the first part of this match was designed to sort of get Rose over in a sense.
Yeah.
Like they sort of wanted him to get his shit in, as the wrestlers say. Jay hit counters with a high power slam, then a drop kick, then three leg drops. Then they both tag their respective tag team partners. The commentator has a funny crack here where he's like, Jeff Rocker's been studying for weeks for his urine test.
Nice.
That's pretty good.
The commentators are bringing out the big guns.
Dude, imagine just on WWE, someone like cracking a joke about a guy being like openly on steroids.
They must have. I'm sure they've made worse jokes on WWE.
No, well, yeah. I mean, Jerry Lawler would make like, you know, very derogatory jokes about women
in the promos as well.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
So Valentine just enters the. It's so weird. They did this a couple times. Like Rocker just taunts Valentine. And then Valentine just gets in the ring and Rocker leaves. And instead of a tag, that's the new match that's happening. And it's happened like a few times. And so Eddie gets Rose on his shoulders for the Doomsday sort of back elbow. And I see Dahmer going for it. And I'm like, why does he keep trying? He's just unathletic. And then to my surprise, he fucking gracefully hops to the top rope and nails the back elbow Doomsday device. And I'm like, John Dahmer, come on.
Yeah, that's the second match power.
Yes. Yeah, maybe that's
he's,
it.
Yeah, he's rusty if he's in first.
He just had enough time between the meal. He was scarfing down backstage.
Yeah, to do his, to warm up.
Yeah. So the Briscoes run in. They hit a double spinebuster on Dahmer. Dahmer no-sells it and hits a reverse exploder on Mark Briscoe, and then an orange crush, followed by his big spinebuster with the what's up leg drop. It all leads to a two count. Ed Valentine's in the ring, provokes Rocker, and then leaves. And then, again, Rocker just takes over the match, starts hitting suplexes on Mark Briscoe. So Mark is sort of, for some reason, the guy they're building up heat on, which didn't really make sense. He finally low blows Rocker, so Rocker just falls and tags Rose, who starts going to work. Jay's tagged in, and he cleans house on both teams. He empties the ring. The Briscoes on Ed and John get reversed and double suplex and then double powerbombed. Rocker and Rose take over. They attack John and Ed. Rose power slams Dahmer, but Ed chucks out Rocker. And then out of nowhere, Eddie Valentine just hits that weird palm strike that he does into the air on Jeff Rocker for the clean win at 10 minutes and 53 seconds. I don't like these matches because it just feels like too chaotic and like...
It's too long. Like, this entire episode, everything is too long.
Yeah.
Like, them. I don't know. Like, it was such a shame after last week.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, I kept getting bored halfway through every single match, and this one definitely was. But halfway through, I mean, it's cool seeing Briscoes and stuff doing moves and all that. But I don't know. It's just hard to get excited about these this match in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. When it's just such a bizarre finish too, because you're seeing all these suplexes and shit, and he hits the like palm strike, and then that's it. And it's almost like, I don't know. So Dahmer and Valentine are your new number one contenders. Are you looking forward to that match?
No.
And then for some reason, Max Smack enters at the end of this match, and he offers his managerial services to Dahmer and Eddie, and they decide that they'll talk.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I suppose someone called Dahmer belongs in the Hate Club.
Are Dahmer and Eddie going to be part of the Hate Club, do you think?
Maybe. That would be an interesting turn.
That would be weird.
Yeah, it would be weird. They don't really fit the vibe, but if Max Smack wants to grow the roster.
Now, given what you just said, I do agree with everything you just said, other than this next match. This next match, I mean, it's weird. It felt like completely out of place, but it was not too long. It was awesome. They bring out Jose Maximo, Yoel Maximo, and Red, a.k.a. the Amazing Red, who I was just fucking blown away to see here in CZW. He's so awesome. They enter the ring together as a trio, and as if they're going to have like a trios match. And then the announcer just like breaks it to him. It's like, actually, guys, this is a three-way match. And they all, like, look at him like they're looking at the format sheet. They're like, what? It says that?
Yeah.
And they seem confused, but then they're like, okay. I guess we're going to wrestle each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're getting the Maximos versing each other versus Amazing Red. And I was excited for this right away. Amazing Red, I almost should have done a side profile for him.
Yeah.
He just didn't really have like a super long career or end up anywhere meaningful other than TNA early on. But he's a part of Ring of Honor, TNA. He's just like an incredible luchador.
Okay.
Who's got like a awesome, like just a list of awesome matches. Like him and Loki, him and AJ Styles. He's fucking great.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's amazing that CZW's getting these.
Amazing Red?
Yeah, there you go. these sorts of people on the show now, I guess, because of ECW kind of collapsing.
Well, I will say, man, Zandig, as dumb and as obnoxious as he is, he does have a sort of eye for talent. I don't know if there's someone bringing these people to him, but like Jun Kasai, like in 2001, is a crazy find. Like Amazing Red. There's the Briscoes. The Briscoes are like teenagers, and he's like, these kids got something.
These kids could, yeah. He did his best to break them.
Yeah.
But they made it.
Yeah. So they just decide to go along with this match and start circling each other, and the audience sort of seems pumped right away. They're like, okay, this should be something. And then they start having some awesome, like, triple paced reverse off, like a triple way, a three way reverse off is what I'm trying to say. They begin another, like, frog. What is it called when you. The frog thing?
Leapfrog.
It's all leapfrog. The frog thing. Jesus Christ. In the frog and bucket, no less. Yeah, they have a leapfrog-based reverse-off before Red just hits this insane tornado DDT on Yoel. Jose throws him outside, hits a big moonsault onto Red outside, and then they both wait for this is so shitty because it's right off the bat. They wait for the Yoel dive, and he just botches brutally.
Yeah.
Like, fucking almost breaks his neck.
It's intense.
And the fans are, like, too polite to say you fucked up because they think he's dead. So then Red immediately just jumps to the top rope and hits a springboard corkscrew. And then in something I've never seen before, I've seen guys do crazy moves and land on his feet. But he lands on his feet and his momentum lands him in just an open chair.
Yeah, it's so insane.
Land seating. I was like, come on.
Yeah, it does look cool. A lot of what's going on. I was like, yeah, and it does seem out of place, like you said. Because yeah. of like how the show's been going so far. Like, it's insane, like, burst of energy. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah, they brawl near the fence that we're used to in this arena. Red just climbs up it like nothing, hits a head scissor on Yoel. They get back in the ring, have another great exchange that just leaves all three down with like a triple clothesline, if you can imagine that. Red gets up and lays out Jose and then hits just a standing shooting star press. And the crowd is like, oh my God, yeah. I have never seen that before. This is when like Billy Kidman only really coined the shooting star press in like 1998, 1999. So to see someone do a standing shooting star press would have been like,
in your CZW
would have melted.
Yeah in CZW in Sewell, New Jersey.
He goes for a moonsault, but Yoel spears Red out of the air, and then he turns around and just is clotheslined out of his boots by Jose. At this point, this match is just fucking unbelievable.
Yeah,
like I'm like losing.
Should have been on a much better show.
Yeah, Jose hits a powerbomb facebuster on Red that just looks insane. Like he goes to powerbomb him and just fucking flatlines him. Red is hung up on the top rope, and then the Maximos hit their double Spanish fly on Red, and all three guys end pinning each other. Like, with there's an all of their shoulders are down. And
yeah,
it's
pretty cool.
Other. And this match ends at 6 minutes and 18 seconds. Like, maybe one of the best matches under 7 minutes I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, insane. Insane that it was on CW. And, like, yeah. I mean,
just with no context? It was so random.
It was very strange. And, like, considering other matches go much longer, like, I don't mind a shorter match, but yeah, maybe give some more time to these dudes instead of John Dahmer.
Maybe that's all they had. And the fans just give them a full standing ovation.
As they should.
Yeah, no, it was great. And then we cut, and the best ever music begins in CZW, as out comes Trent Acid and Zabar. You know it. If Matt Prince hadn't done a beautiful intro for this podcast, we would just start it with
the chase. You think we'd be allowed to?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's not enough people listening to this to
copyright
strike us. Much like how CZW is allowed to.
Yeah, they don't
care.
For
the same reason.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because they're releasing this on DVD, if you think about that. They just use all these copyrights.
Maybe they credit. Maybe he's the only one. Zandig respects him too much and, like, pays him royalties.
So, out comes the opponent of Trent Acid, Ruckus, who commentators... this is where commentators claim... This is the man who rid CZW of the Rock and Rebel, which I'm like, great. That's awesome. So we get Trent Acid versus Ruckus. I got to say, I was pretty excited for this.
Yeah, one. Yeah. Both very athletic. Could be a lot of fun stuff to see from both of them. So, yeah, I was looking forward to it.
Yeah. No, this is great. So Trent Acid is doing his whole delaying the match thing on the outside. So as he does that, Ruckus goes to the second rope to sort of taunt. And then Trent goes to attack him from behind, but Ruckus just hops backwards over his head and drop kicks him to the outside. Follows it up with a double handspring moonsault over the top rope onto Trent Acid, and then follows it up with his rampway handspring moonsault. It felt like Ruckus knew this was like the biggest match of his career so far.
Yeah, he's so gracious. I can't get over it.
He was like treating this like a big deal.
Yeah, just the way he moves through the air. It's wild.
Yeah, nailing it.
Yeah.
Back in the ring, Zabar attempts to interfere, but I hate saying Zabar, by the way. I hate that this show makes me say
Zabar,
every week. But Ruckus slams him and then does a handspring elbow to Trent in the corner, and then somersault splashes onto Zabar into a tornado DDT on Acid. He's just running wild on these guys.
He's going in psycho mode.
I will say Acid is really good at just, he won't get a move of offense in the first half of a match. And it just, the crowd loves it. That's what they're there to see.
Yeah.
He is the top heel in the company, essentially. I really think Trent Acid's like a finished product, but just a guy who would have fit in WWE at this point.
Yeah, I think he would have been a huge star.
Mm-hmm. If only he didn't love drugs so much.
And that maybe was part of his star quality, so who knows?
That's what made him so cool.
Yeah.
Acid finally gets his first move in. This is like 5 minutes into the match with a roaring elbow. Looks great. Goes for another one, but he gets kicked in the head. And then Acid begins faking the head injury. This I hated because we've already seen him do it where he's like really selling his head like he's injured. And then Ruckus has to play idiot and, like, turn his back to the... Be like, oh, I don't know what... And then that's when Acid runs in, hits a super kick.
He's playing possum.
How could we...
He's playing possum. God damn it, he's playing possum.
Yeah, if playing possum is one of your spots, you should just never...
Yeah, don't. You shouldn't do it that much.
Yeah. So Ruckus is on the apron. He gets... This happens a couple times in the show. So they don't show anyone setting up the chair table. But Ruckus is on the apron, and he eats a Yakuza kick and just falls through a chair table that we didn't know was there.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
And also because Ruckus is so heavy, it's one of those ones where the chairs just go flying in every direction. Yeah. And he just hits the concrete, essentially. This looks fucking brutal. And then Zabar resets the chair table and lays Ruckus on it. And then Trent hits the bad trip off the top rope. That's what he's calling that 180 splash he does.
It's a good move.
So it's a splash off the top rope to the outside on Ruckus, who's on a chair table. It looks cool, but it looked fucking brutal for Ruckus. Back in the ring, Acid attempts a moonsault, but Ruckus super kicks him out of the air, which looks sort of sloppy, but you got the idea. And then they have a reverse off that leads into a slam and two moonsaults from Ruckus, followed by his flip over face buster. And then he hits a swanton bomb that barely connects. It's like the back of Ruckus's head sort of hits him like in the belly a bit.
Yeah, that would be terrifying, though, to see Ruckus
arriving
at you. Yeah.
Yeah. Trent hits an impressive wheelbarrow German suplex on Ruckus, which just it looks like it's like. Again, like, Ruckus must weigh almost as twice as much as Trent here.
Yeah.
So anytime Trent hits, like, a big move on Ruckus, it just looks sort of...
It looks insane.
Sort of crazy. He lays a chair on his head, hits the tumbleweed leg drop on it, and then he sets up the acid bomb, but Ruckus does this awesome counter. Like, he flips acid into a face buster, and then he gets immediately hits a split-legged moonsault for a two count. At this point, I'm like, this match is fucking awesome. This is sort of what I wanted from this match.
Yeah.
He attempts a 450 splash. Well, he hits a 450, but Zabar moves Acid out of the way. So there's no one in the pool. Ruckus just wipes out onto the floor. And then Trent makes a classic chair table, lays Ruckus on top of it, hits a top rope leg drop, lifts him onto the top rope, and then hits a brutal acid bomb onto a chair for 12 minutes and 18 seconds. I thought this match was great.
Yeah, probably obviously that Amazing Red's probably the best match of the night, but this was a lot of fun. I like seeing Ruckus. Ruckus has a lot of fun in the ring, I'd say.
Yeah.
With a lot of flips, a lot of jumping about, and Trent Acid is like the perfect foil for him. So it's good to see Ruckus, like you said, escape his trauma from the past. So
He rid CZW.
Yeah, he got rid of him, and for that I will always respect him and love him. So, yeah, it's a solid match. And always like seeing Trent Acid, always like hearing the chase. So
I'm going to listen to it on the way home after this. And there's nothing after the match. It's a bar and Acid just celebrate to the back. And I think the right guy went over, too. Like, Ruckus is sort of lower mid-card, and Acid is the guy they're pushing to the main event. So
yeah.
That made sense. We cut as the announcer introduces Jimmy Washington's cavalcade of stars. And you know what I loved about this segment?
None of it.
No, Eric Gargiulo. The face commentator said exactly what we want to say. He just shits all over it. He's like, this segment reliably kills the pace of the show.
Yeah.
Why is it still happening? It sucks. I hate this. That's
it
the
is
commentator.
Weird. Yeah, it is weird him breaking Kate, like being like, yeah, this is.
He said, I've talked to production and asked to get this off the show.
I think he has genuinely as well. Like, I do believe it because it is shit. Like, it is so bad. And it does.
Yeah.
It's like 10-15 minutes and you're just like, this the show would be so much smoother without it.
And we must be coming up to like 20 shows in a row where Jimmy Washington gets a isolated like
yeah I don't know segment. What on earth blackmail material he's got on Zandig to keep getting this section.
It's crazy
because it's not good. They don't do anything with it really.
I feel like they were like, okay, well, what was his old name, like Pastor Jim, that really didn't work. And he's like, well, what if I'm a cowboy? And it's like, that wasn't the problem. Like, you're the problem.
Yeah.
This sucks.
yeah, exactly. And, like, Thingy's in it now is with, you know, used to be with John Dahmer as well. So.
Oh, Natasha. Yeah. Gargiulo even takes a shot at her. She's like, wow, she couldn't have even dressed up for the occasion.
Yeah.
Because she's wearing, like, sweats and, like, a T-shirt.
She hates being there.
She looks like a slob.
Yeah.
Jimmy, again, with awful audio. It's an audio segment.
I just hate it. It makes me check out.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so bad.
He starts hitting his hacky jokes on the crowd. And they're like jokes that, like, if a drunk told you them in the bar, you'd be like, all right, man, I'm going to have to cut you off. Like,
yeah.
This is just fucking so lame. And he's angry about how wrestlers have been attacking him lately. And I'm like, that's literally the only thing I like about the segment. So
yeah, that, right. People attack you.
And out comes Johnny Cashmere. And right away, again, Washington just mocks him for losing to Zabar. So that's like the new way these things go. He's fucking like, he mocks the wrestlers to their face and then they beat him up. It's like, what? It doesn't make
it's
sense.
It's just, I hate it. I hate it all. It's so bad.
So Cashmere shoves him to the ground. He takes the mic. And Cashmere's actually got decent delivery, so I could sort of understand what he was saying. He's like, I had one friend back there, and it was Trent Acid. And then Zandig makes me face this guy and this guy, and all I want to do is fight Trent Acid or whatever. And he says, if Zandig wants me out of this company, he's going to have to fucking kill me. So then Zandig's music hits, and I'm like, oh, he's going
to
come out and
kill him. Kill him. Just put a gun to his head.
When he rushes the ring and he gets in Cashmere's face, and again, like, I don't understand what he's saying. The mic is just fucking so gargly, and it's full Zandig voice.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, he has Zabar holding his title. That sort of a gimmick I like is that Zandig just makes Zabar hold the world title.
Yeah, he's like one of them in medieval days. They had just a boy that would follow them about. I can't remember the name.
Yeah. Oh, even in Japan, they call them the young boys.
Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah. They just carry shit around for them and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, Zabar is like his young boy. Which is probably where Zandig got it, because he's such a mark for Japan.
Yeah, true.
He's like,
I should
have a young boy, but he'll be a white trash hillbilly like me.
Yeah, he's probably the same age, but hasn't done as many drugs, so looks infinitely younger.
Yeah. So he says something to make so this is the thing. Zandig's talking shit to Cashmere, and then he says something to him, and Cashmere's like, oh, okay. And he just leaves the ring.
Yeah.
So, like, backs down like a total bitch. This is where Jimmy Washington gets the microphone back. He's like, hey, Zandig, I know it's your company, but this is my show. And then he makes a crack at Zandig for being bald. So Zandig fucking lays him out.
Never talk about another man's hair.
Come on.
Yeah, don't call him bald.
And I mean, Jimmy has a cowboy hat on, but I'm sure he's bald.
Yeah, he's balding for sure. There's no way that man has a full head of hair.
Yeah. But I did love, like, Zandig, he's not one to, like, pull punches, literally. Like, it looks like he will fucking clock this guy. Yeah, so he tells fans, if they don't like what he does, don't spend your money. Stay home. And I'm like, what a business plan.
He immediately off air is like, please come. Yeah. Please keep coming.
Yes, this is better than ECW.
Yeah.
The segment is just, I have written here, segment quickly deteriorating into classic Zandig self-love fest.
Mm.
Because he's just doing a promo. I don't even know the words. Then finally music hits and Lobo comes out with his Iron Man belt. It's the commentator mics are crystal clear and the in-ring mics are so awful. And it just like, it's just the worst.
Yeah.
This whole segment has been going on at least like 10 minutes at this point.
Yeah, because then Lobo starts cutting a super long promo, and it's just the worst.
Super long promo.
Yeah, it's just so. Yeah, he's got nothing to him.
Lobo gets in Zandig's face, and Zandig just again leaves.
Yeah,
I guess it's like, oh, it's your part to talk. Like, it's just like fucking so stupid.
Yeah, it's so lame.
And then as soon as Zandig gets out, Lobo's like, "That guy's the biggest asshole I've ever seen in my life." It's like, cool, bro. Like, he was just in your face. He does this awful thing. This reminded me like a comic that's bombing. He's like, other promoters want to see my credits? I'll show you my credits right here. And he pulls out his wallet and he's like, I got a Visa, I got a MasterCard. And he's throwing his cards like on the
credit
canvas.
Was a lot easier to get back then.
Oh,
let's
dude.
Not forget.
This is so fucking bad. It was so bad.
Yeah, it's so boring. Like, yeah. I just wanted it to be over.
And so finally Lobo gets to the point. And I'm skipping over minutes here.
Yeah.
It's been a good 25 minutes since we've seen wrestling. And he's like, next week it's me and Pondo in a no ropes barbed wire match. Which I'm like, at least that should rule.
Yeah, at least that's a match and you won't speak.
Yeah, and he drops the microphone and then has to collect his own credit cards off
yeah,
the mat.
That is pretty funny, yeah.
You can tell they're his real cards.
Yeah, he doesn't have a squire.
Oh, it's so fucking bad, man. This is one of the worst segments in CZW history.
It's so boring. It made me sleepy. I'm sleepy thinking about it now. It was just awful. I just hated it. I was like, this show felt like such a huge step back from even the previous few weeks.
I agree, man.
And this was like just
this was killing me.
Yeah, it just really what like one of those times where I was just like, do I want to do this anymore? Because it's just like 2 hour, 10 minute show, and just yeah, it was
well,
just
I remember
so bad.
This, I'm watching this on a train on the way to Blackpool.
Yeah, that's and you don't want that journey to feel long.
That's a grim.
You want to get to Blackpool as soon as possible.
It's a grim reality I was in. This
yeah, that is dark.
So we cut, and then, hey Ben, do you remember that evil referee that fucked over Rick Blade like 3 or 4 shows ago?
No.
Whose name we couldn't recall because the microphones didn't work?
Oh, yeah.
Well, apparently his name was H.C. Loke, and he's here to wrestle Rick Blade.
Okay.
And so that's the match. He enters dressed as a gym rat, and they say, this is the ref, the guy with the real effective finisher. Don't you like
the real effective finisher?
I wish I could show you the face Ben just made.
Yeah.
When I said that to him. Yeah, no, this was fucking awful. So that's how they introduce this guy. The guy who was a referee but also wrestles sometimes.
Yeah.
He's going to take on your biggest star, maybe.
Like
your franchise player.
Yeah.
Rick Blade. And so out comes Rick Blade. Looking as cool as he ever has, I gotta say.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks solid.
Rick Blade looks sick.
They do keep bringing up actually franchise players and things like that, where they're like, oh, this guy's... It's like, no way!
Yeah, how many franchise players can you have? I thought there was just one.
Yeah, I thought that's the whole point of a franchise player. If every player is a franchise player, then no player is.
Zabar is the franchise player.
Yeah, he is.
So we get Rick Blade versus H.C. Loke. By the way, spelled H.C.L.O.C. Loke.
Yeah.
How would you spell Loke if you had to?
Loke.
Like Loke over here.
Loco, because I think of like the video game Loco Roco, which is how it's spelled. Right, oh, wait, okay. No, L-O-C-O, is it Loke?
Yeah, but Loke, yeah, just cut the O.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was
fair play to CZW for giving it a go, I guess.
So Blade is distracted by Zabar early as fans start chanting, who are you, to H.C. Loke. And then they start chanting Jobber, which is even funnier.
Yeah, I've never heard a Jobber chant.
Have you? Yeah.
Not in CZW, anyway.
No, but I mean, they were right.
Normally it's gay or something.
Yeah. At least they didn't use a slur.
Yeah, exactly. Jobber's like relatively fine.
Yeah. So Blade just starts fucking him up with impressive head kicks. He hits an enziguri, knocks Loke outside. And then back in the ring, Loke hits a mule. Because I just thought this match was going to be Blade just fucking this guy up for a few minutes. They have a very competitive match. I was like, what is this? Loke hits a mule kick and then a neck dropper with a big punch. It's like he wants to show off his right hand here. He's in full control with a suplex into a dragon stretch. And then Blade starts mounting offense, but Barr pulls him outside and attacks him. Blade just knocks Zabar to the floor and then turns around into an apron senton from H.C. Loke. And then Blade 450s onto his feet in the ring and then turns around and eats a big boot. Like, H.C. Loke is taking most of this match.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this?
Is he, maybe he's an actual wrestler. I don't know. It's
he
very
must be an indie wrestler, yeah.
Yeah, it's very strange.
H.C. Loke clotheslines his head off and then Blade tries to do a leg drop and falls short and Loke puts him in a reverse Boston Crab. The commentators are like, Rick Blade just looks off his game. And it's like, no, he's losing to a guy you booked as a referee a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
This is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
You're making your star look terrible. Finally, Blade counters with an Alabama slam that, for some reason, the commentators kept calling a Manhattan drop. I don't know if it had been coined at this point, but it is an Alabama slam. You know what I'm talking about.
That's a better name, Alabama slam.
Yeah, Hardcore Holly coined that one.
Yeah.
He locks in a... this is weird. So Rick Blade locks in a clover leaf in the middle of the ring, and Loke is like selling like he's gonna tap, and then it's like Rick Blade just gets tired of it and just lets go of the hold and then goes on to like different moves. I was like, okay. They do a pinfall off, but in slow motion. It's like the slowest just reversal of pinfalls you've ever seen. Not actually slow motion like PWG style, but just so choreographed and awful looking.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it ends in a double down clothesline to both of them. Blade hits a neckbreaker, and then an awesome, like, I've never seen this. So Loke is down in the ring, in the middle of the ring, and Blade just launches his body over and does a full flip and just lands on him. It's not a 450, but it just looked fucking cool.
It looks cool, yeah.
Loke is outside with the bar, and Blade hits a huge moonsault onto both of them. And then Blade makes a chair table, lays Loke on it, and gets into the ring to do his patented Swanton Bomb through Loke. Loke moves last second.
What a surprise.
And Blade just fucking wipes out through this chair table.
Yeah, it looks brutal.
Fucking awful. But because the commentators can't, they clearly can't see what happened.
Yeah.
They're like, he just smoked H.C. Loke.
Yeah.
How's H.C. Loke going to survive this? And it's like, we just saw him completely move out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be like after Darby Allin went through that glass in the Sting match. They're like, whoa, Matt Jackson just
yeah,
hit
the glass.
Yeah, I
can't believe what Nick Jackson just did. That's insane.
Yeah. It's fucking dumb. So back in the ring, H.C. Loke is just in control, and I think the commentators realize they fucked up. He gets to the top rope and hits a top rope sling blade, which I've never seen before, actually. So way to go, H.C. Loke. Loke then lodges a chair in the corner, which is weird because he would immediately pull it out, and then he swings it at Blade, throws it at him for him to catch, tries to kick him, and Blade just, like, with no maybe a foot between him, throws the chair as hard as he can, and it just bounces off Loke's head. Looked fucking brutal. And then Blade hits all of his suplexes, like the menagerie of suplexes, and then he hits the quadrasalt, they're calling it, three moonsaults, and he's like, no, I'm not going to hit the fourth until he's on a table. He lays him out on the table, falls short with the corkscrew. Like, I think his leg maybe hits Loke,
yeah,
but he lands on his head. Obviously, the table doesn't break. This looks fucking awful. And Loke, to his credit, instead of just going back to the spot, he's like, okay, I'm in control. I'll put the table in the corner.
Yeah.
Then he goes to Irish whip Blade into it. And you can tell, like, Loke set this up. And Blade gets him in the corner. Fisherman busters him into the table in the corner, which doesn't break. It looks
yeah,
fucking
no,
brutal.
It looks yeah. That table's nails.
Yeah.
I am the table. Yeah, it's
I'm sure whoever owns the arena is like, just fucking make sure the tables are stable.
Yeah.
They're going to smash them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyways, even though it doesn't break, Blade gets the win here. This match with H.C. Loke went 15 minutes and 17 seconds, dude.
Too long. That is the overall sentiment for this episode.
That's what this show should be called.
Yeah, too long.
CW, too
yeah.
long. Going long.
Yeah. The time is back.
You look like you're falling asleep.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was at the time. But I'm also, obviously, you can hear, not particularly well. So, yeah, it was tough to get through. But
and
you know, relitigating it certainly doesn't help. But, yeah, I don't know. It was like, just...
With no stakes, it was just bullshit match.
Yeah, I don't know. It just felt extra worse as well, given that they seem to be on an upward trajectory with the past couple of weeks. And now it's just like, oh, maybe Zandig's the problem.
Yeah.
Which would be a tough realization.
Yeah, imagine you title your show The Boss Is Back and then
and
it's
was like,
the worst show you've
yeah,
ever watched.
Yeah, exactly.
So we cut, and then out next is Johnny Cashmere, who's looking angry as ever. I'm sure they set this segment up earlier with Zandig, but we just couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
And then they introduce Trent Acid and Zabar. And they come out with, they don't even come out with the towel boy. You know how we talked about a few weeks ago, the guy who wipes the ropes with the towel?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he was doing that in the ring, and the commentator's like, why is he doing that now? Like, we don't need a towel boy in here right now.
Yeah.
And then Zabar's like, Trent Acid's like, you're not ready to face me. You need to face the towel boy. So we get Johnny Cashmere versus the towel boy.
Yeah,
that's what it said on the graphic.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
And so right away, the towel boy wraps a towel around Cashmere's neck and jumps to the outside, hanging him up on the top rope.
It's a great move.
And the commentator's like, that's no regular towel boy. This is where this got fucking stupid, man. So Cashmere just starts beating the shit out of the towel boy. He locks him in a reverse STF, the same move he did a few weeks ago. And the towel boy is just tapping furiously. This has gone a minute and 36. And Acid comes in and just hits Cashmere like three times in the ribs with a chair. And it doesn't matter, though. Like, the bell rings.
Yeah.
But then Cashmere's like, no selling it. He's like, I can withstand this. And then the match just continues for some reason. Like, it doesn't make sense at all. But the match continues. So Cashmere then locks the sharpshooter into the towel boy. And again, the towel boy's tapping like crazy. This
it
like a
could have
later.
Really hurt. I feel if you the towel ball, yeah, yeah.
Oh, dude, the sharpshooter does hurt.
Yeah, yeah, especially if, like, I mean, he's obviously not a regular towel boy, but I don't know. He's like, this could have hurt.
Well, and again, Acid just they do the same gimmick where he hits him three times on the back with a chair.
Yeah.
And then Cashmere won't break it, so he pulls out a bag of powder. And Cashmere's just watching him, like, empty a bag of powder into his hand, and he throws it in his face.
Yeah.
And again, Cashmere just completely no-sells it.
Maybe it was Bisquick again. I still don't know what that is.
I still don't either.
Yeah, I just don't know.
I think it's pancake mix.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know. That might be me being racist. Cashmere eventually he flips the towel boy over the top rope with a suplex onto the big deals and then continues just beating the towel boy in the ring. And then finally, Zabar and Acid just trip Cashmere up and hold his feet as the towel boy gets the pin for the win at 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Even though we saw him tap this guy out twice, this was the official finish.
Yeah.
And so Towel Boy officially has a win over...
Glad it was clean. Yeah, I'm glad it was a clean win.
It's fucking, this segment was so weird, man.
Yeah, very strange.
After the match, Cashmere just keeps beating the Towel Boy. Zabar and Acid leave, but then he tries to sneak attack, and Cashmere gets the upper hand, landing a big spin-out powerbomb on Trent Acid. That's clearly the match they're building towards.
Yeah.
And by the way, Johnny Cashmere, I forgot to say, what's the song by Linkin Park? I don't want to break. Anything you say to me.
One step to the edge. And I don't want to break.
That's Johnny Cashmere's entrance music.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a good song.
2001, yeah. I mean, that must
Yeah, Linkin Park were popping off in 2001, I think.
Yeah, that song rules. Big Shiny yeah. Tune 6, I remember.
Yeah.
And then the weirdest part. So Cashmere has cleared the ring, and then Lobo appears and just raises Cashmere's arm. And he's like, you fucking did it, man.
Yeah, you beat up the towel boy.
He shows respect. And then, yeah, this was fucking terrible, man.
Yeah.
I can tell you're so done with this.
Yeah, it was so bad. Like, it was so bad. I hated it.
Yeah, this was really bad.
Yeah, it was really bad. There was a couple of bright spots, but it was so fucking... genuinely, like, I was watching it, I was just like... I can't do this anymore.
No, you can't quit the podcast.
No, I'm not. I won't. But I think when you've just had that high, yeah. To hit rock bottom so soon after, it's just like, it's a real switcheroo of emotions.
Yeah, no, this is so, so bad.
Sorry.
Ben is literally dying into the microphone yeah. here. So we cut, and we get our CZW tag team match, sort of title match. So... Nick Gage and Nate Hatred versus Wifebeater and Justice Payne. If Wifebeater and Justice Payne don't win in 5 minutes, it is no longer a tag team title match, and it becomes
Wifebeater yeah.
and Justice Payne versus Zandig and Jun Kasai.
What an insane stipulation.
What a fucking dumb stipulation.
Yeah, that's so, like,
I
why?
Can understand if Kasai and Zandig join the match 5 minutes in.
Yeah, exactly. They should just have to beat them. Like,
in fact,
they should have to beat both of them. Yeah,
that's what I thought it was.
Yeah.
Until what happened. And I was
yeah.
like, oh, right.
It's just crazy. Like, it's... I mean, I like all the wrestlers involved. Even Nate Hatred has grown on me.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so I was like, okay, let's see. You know, it's been a little while since we've seen Wifebeater.
Well, in the beginning of this match, because they're selling that there's this insane pace... and they need to do it. Everyone's hitting shit so intensely. Like, Wifebeater throws Gage so hard against the ropes and power slams him so brutally.
Yeah, there is a lot of moments like that in this. Like, there's just a lot of throwing people into walls.
Just intense. Like, yeah. Intense moves. They're all hitting shit, like, really hard.
Yeah.
Justice Payne gets in there and just starts fucking cleaning house. Hits a reverse Samoan drop on Nate Hatred. Even Nate Hatred comes in and hits this awesome face buster on Justice Payne, like, right off the bat.
Yeah, it's like when you're fighting against a boss in a video game and you know he's got, like, an enrage meter.
Yes.
You're like, I need to beat him.
It.
So you're just like, I need to beat him before he enrages.
I gotta
and
hit
become
the
Zandig.
So Wifebeater hits two power slams and then on each guy and then knocks him outside onto tables. Justice Payne launches. Oh, sorry. He knocks him just outside and then he tables. Like, Wifebeater becomes the table. Justice Payne.
Yeah.
Justice Payne dives off Wifebeater's back with just a clean dive over the top rope.
He's looking good, Justice Payne.
Both these guys are.
Yeah.
All four of these guys are looking good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This was like a match I would just wish this was the match.
Yeah, oh man. And if this had come maybe 2 hours earlier, I would have been like, hell yeah, CZW.
Yeah, so Justice Payne runs Gage into the cage, and then he just turns and throws the dew into the cage as well for good measure. Everyone's brawling outside as Gage gets on the top rope, jumps on the other three, including his own partner, Hatred. And then Gage and Hatred. This is the second spot. I mentioned it earlier with Ruckus. You don't see anyone constructing a chair table.
No, yeah.
And then they just lift White Feeder up and beel him over the top through this massive chair
table. Yeah, it is insane. I don't know who's built it.
It looks fucking brutal. And White Feeder's just out for the count. And that's when the guy gets on the microphone and he says, the 5 minutes has expired at 7 minutes and 30 seconds. And out comes Zandig and Jun Kasai. And Jun Kasai is so cool, dude.
Yeah, he is. He's sick.
He's undeniably just... Because he's, like, such a perfect minion. Like, yeah. He works with Zandig so well. It's such, like, a good tandem. Even though this match is just fucking awful. So, Wifebeater pulls out Zandig and they start brawling as Kasai and Justice Payne have a face-off in the ring. And at this point, I'm like, where have Hatred and Gage gone? Because I totally didn't understand how the stipulation worked. And the commentators are like, well, Gage and Hatred's night is done. They're in the back in the locker room.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts.
It's just a dumb...
It's insane that they just left. Like, why would they just leave? Like, I don't understand why they wouldn't stay and just still beat up Thingy. Like, the adhering to rules and when they do and don't is just insane.
Yeah. No, you're right. So Kasai hits a German suplex with a bridge on Justice Payne. Hartog's just not in the ring to count. And again, there's no explanation. I assume maybe he was ushering Gage out.
Maybe he's Loke, mate. Maybe he puts on a fat suit to keep himself hidden.
This whole time?
Yeah.
So Zandig brutally powerbombs Wifebeater through a chair table outside. Like, high angle, Wifebeater comes down on the back of his neck and shoulders.
There's a lot of things, like I'm saying, there's a lot of just throwing, like, not, like, nice-looking moves. Just, like, at one point, Wifebeater will just start punching one of them in the back.
Yeah,
or, like, throwing them into a wall or something. There's just lots of throwing them into, like,
the
objects.
Sea of chairs.
Like, not doing, like, powerbomb or, like, doing moves or whatever. Just, like, being like, well, that's something that'll hurt if I throw them onto it. So let's do it.
Well, and then I feel like they've got this new thing where instead of setting up their own plunder and weapons, they'll just have the production do it to save time. Because they go to the entrance ramp, and there's just two tables stacked up on top of each other.
That must be who's doing it. Little elves are running in, building weapons.
If Zandig was Santa, his elves are, like, setting up
all
the
weapons.
Oh, can
you imagine if he's... Yeah.
He is, dude.
He'd have a red nose.
I got you a light tube.
Yeah.
So they set Wifebeater up on top of these double tables, and then Jun Kasai puts on his fucking air flight goggles.
They are sick.
It is sick.
Yeah.
I mean, Jun Kasai, it's funny because he's done this for as long as I've known him, his career. It's so cool to see he's been doing it this early. And he climbs to the very top, like, high wall that we've talked about Rick Blade climbing.
The famous wall. You all should know it by now.
Yeah, go back and listen if you don't know what we're talking about. You are not real fans.
You are not real fan. You need to know the canon and the lore.
Yeah, but, like legitimately, like, 20 feet up, dude.
Yeah, it's insane.
So fucking high.
Yeah.
To stabilize himself, he grabs a light fixture hanging from the roof of this giant arena. And Jun Kasai just falls off.
He does just fall off.
He doesn't dive. He falls.
Yeah, it's like that meme where you see Kermit falling off a roof. Like, it just looks like that. It doesn't, like, there's no gracefulness in his jump. He just, like, falls.
He lets his body leave.
Yeah, he's the falling man. Yeah, it's crazy.
He's like the upside down guy from 9/11.
Yeah, that's the falling man. He's like that. Exactly like
that.
Imagine
if that guy landed on Wifebeater on two tables.
I don't know if he'd take more damage. I feel like Wifebeater would be fine.
So Wifebeater is just laid out here.
Yeah.
And then for some reason at this point, Nate Hatred and Nick Gage rush the ring, which is like, why did they go to the back to begin
with? Why did they leave, bro? Why did they leave?
They begin double teaming Justice Payne in the ring as Zandig and Jun Kasai are double teaming Wifebeater outside. This is one of my favorite visuals in a CZW match. So Zandig is like fireman carrying Wifebeater back to the ring.
Yeah, that's...
As he's doing it, Jun Kasai is just punching
Wifebeater
in the back of the head.
It is just like so funny. He is just like a minion.
Yeah,
like he is
awesome.
A proper minion.
And
like,
he's got the evil smile the whole time.
Yeah, he's great. He is very, very good. But yeah, he's having a lot of fun with it. I'm having fun with it. I did laugh at that moment, actually, like where he's just
punching him in the back of the head.
Yeah, he's just punching him in the back of the head. Yeah,
and he's like unconscious.
Yeah, like giving him immeasurable amount of damage to his concussed brain, I imagine. But I'm all here for it.
So Justice Payne just keeps kicking out as these guys are just double team moving him, and then finally they just pick him up. They hit a powerbomb neckbreaker combo, and Nick Gage pins Justice Payne, which I thought wasn't even the match anymore.
Yeah, hasn't he left? I don't...
12 minutes and 56 seconds. Let's not question it.
Yeah, no. I mean, this was a fun match. Like, it it was like...
Big spots.
Yeah, I think as soon as Gage and Hatred moved, like, left... Like, I did, you know, Jun Kazai is amazing, so it definitely picked up when it mutated. But, yeah, I enjoyed it. And, like, 12 minutes is fine for your main event or whatever. Like, yeah, that let it breathe.
It went 3 minutes less than HC Loke versus Rick Blaine.
Yeah, and probably, you know, 2 hours less than Lobo's insane promo. So, that, you know, it's crazy what they're giving priority to. And I think that's probably because... They're not they just aren't strict. There's no like hard limits. There's no like WWE, you're on a schedule, bang, bang, bang. With this, I guess they're just like, well, if we go for a little bit, like, who cares?
So we always do the comedy comparisons. But I remember doing a show a couple months ago where I was closing it, and I just hear the guy before the show running it being like, hey guys, so there's no tight times. You guys can just do as long as you want. And I'm like, for fuck's sake, yeah, man. Like, I've got a train to catch. And some of these guys are going to do 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's so fucking lame. It's so stupid. Like, some things need...
professional.
Yeah, some things need rules.
Yes.
You know, and maybe that... I genuinely think there's something at Froggy's... Because every show there has been, like, 90 minutes. So yes. I think they've... And it's definitely helped the show's quality. So, yeah. But it was fun. I had fun with this match.
Yeah. some little bit of fun we had in this 2 hour and 10 minute show.
Yeah.
And so they're continuing the attack, all the heels on Justice Pan and White Feeder, when all of a sudden the locker room, the babyface locker room, rushes out, led by Lobo and Kashmir, and they save the day. They kick the guys out, and Zandig is cutting a promo. And the whole time he's cutting a promo outside, he's got his arm around Kasai, like he's his boy. And again, just I wish you guys could see this visual, because it's so funny.
They look cute together.
They do look super cute together. Yeah. And Kasai's just like cackling.
He loves it. He doesn't know what's going on. Imagine living with... I don't know where he lives when he's in America.
Yeah.
Does he live... Imagine living with Zandig.
He must.
Yeah. How insane would that be?
He's probably just on his couch.
Yeah. How crazy is that? Zandig gives me the energy of, he doesn't have a bed. He also sleeps on a couch in his room.
Next to Jun Kazai.
Yeah. I don't know. Very strange. But yeah, it is cute.
So he cuts a promo, I assume, setting up a match. You can't hear what he's saying.
No.
The baby faces are clapped off. And this show mercifully ends.
With a freeze frame. It's just like a freeze. It just stops. And I was like, is it over? And he's like, it doesn't cut to anything. It just freezes. And I was like, all right. I hope this is over.
Thank you for ending.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Thank you for ending. Yeah.
So, yeah, Ben, I'm going to let you kick this one off, because you seem to have strong opinions about it.
Like 0.5. Like 0.5. Yeah. It's harder to give it, like, it's been going now for, like, what? It would have been going for a couple of years. We've seen it improve as it's gone on. And, like, the benefit of the doubt, like, if this was one of the first episodes, you'd be like, holy shit, CZW is going to be so sick.
Yeah.
But now you're like...
How do they put on shows like this?
Yeah, it's been going a while, and, like, they're bringing in great wrestlers from ECW or whatever, but... It's just unforgivable, some of this stuff. That is my catchphrase. Unforgivable.
I got to say, like, usually I feel like I'm a bit more sour than you. I was going to go 1 out of 7.
What?
Whole one.
I mean, that's fair.
Single digit.
You love Amazing Red. Like, I think...
That match was sick. I love Little Guido.
Yeah, Little Guido was cool. Yeah, I'm sticking with 0.5. But there was nice moments, but I think it's just the overall feeling from the show.
Bad show.
Yeah, by the time it finished, I was just knackered.
Yeah, me too. And I'm watching it on a train.
That is the worst way to watch it. Like, on your phone as well.
Yeah, on my phone. And Jesus. The worst is when, because I knew on Saturday, I'm like, I'm busy Sunday. So I won't have time to watch this unless I watch it on the way back from the gig when you're already tired and shit. And you're just watching HC Loke wrestle Rick Blade, and this is fucking awful.
It would have been very funny if someone tapped you on the shoulder and he's like, been like, is that HC Loke against Rick Blade?
that HC Loke.
Yeah, man. Yeah, what happened with that guy, man? Am I right? Yeah.
Even Rick Blade, but yeah, HC Loke.
If you're on Blackpool, train as well, someone would be like, Rockin' Rebel, I miss that. I sure miss that guy.
Well, anyways, guys, this has been Comics in the Combat Zone. If you want to thank us for
please
getting
thank this
us. One for you, reach out. I'm on Instagram at FunnyJordanD, on Twitter at FunnyJordanD.
I'm at Instagram at PinkHoverboard.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back with you next week.